coming soon. Now you dear old man, whisper what you bring to me. Tell me if you can. When the clock is striking 12 and I'm sound asleep, down the chimney broad and black, with your back to free, all the stockings you will find hanging in the row, mine will be the shortest one, you'll be sure to know.
Johnny wants a pair of skates, Susie wants a sled,
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to your Sunday program, Happy Station, from PCJ Radio International. Today, the 18th of December, we present the first of two Christmas programs that we do every year. So sit back and enjoy. We have a wonderful story that's going to be read to us by Neville Gray, and then a program that hasn't been heard since it was originally broadcast many years ago by Tom Meyer, called Silent Night. But first, we're going to begin with a singer from Finland. Her name is Johanna Rusanen, and it's Joy to the World. From Finland, Johanna Rusanen with Joy to the World. Well, if you tune in a little late, you're listening to Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. And every year, we like to present two Christmas programs. You can call this the pre-Christmas program, and next week's program is the actual program itself. Many programs indeed. And this year, Christmas actually falls on the 25th of December. So what do we have planned? Well, we actually have our usual thing. But on today's show, we have something very special coming up after our next piece of music, which is going to be Perry Como and Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
You better watch out, you better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're away. He knows if you've been bad or good.
So be good for goodness sake.
So you better watch out. You better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Say, Perry, somebody's ringing the front doorbell. Shall I answer it?
Oh, tell him to go away, Helen. We've got to decorate this Christmas
tree. Where do I connect the lights, Perry?
Artie, all you have to do is put the thing in a plug.
Hey, Perry, I can't find a train switch. Know where it is?
Bobby, the train switch is always where it's always
hey,
been.
Hey, Perry, what do you want for Christmas? Now, wait a minute. Where are you going?
Oh, I'm going out to give a few haircuts. You kids go ahead and sing. I'll be right back.
You better watch out. You better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Oh, Santa Claus is coming to town.
He's making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good.
So be good for goodness sake. You better watch out. You better not cry. Better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Perry Como and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Many of you have heard of the well-known Christmas song Silent Night. What is the story behind it? Actually, it is a very interesting one. And Tom Meyer, who hosted Happy Station from 1970 to 1992, produced a little drama about Silent Night. Now, what you are about to hear has never been broadcast since it first originally went out. So here, without further ado, is Tom Meyer and the story of Silent Night.
Our story begins in Oberndorf in Austria, not far from Salzburg. It's a few days before Christmas. The year is 1818. The world is quiet in Oberndorf, covered as it is by a thick blanket of snow. It's cold outside. But inside the home of Pastor Joseph Moore, it's warm and cozy. Mrs. Moore is cooking dinner.
I don't really know, darling. I suppose he is still in church, making preparations for the Christmas service. Why?
Well, we have to write a Christmas story at school, and I thought Daddy could help me. He knows everything about Christmas, doesn't he?
Well, yes. But do you think it's fair to the other children whose fathers are not pastors? They have to write it themselves too, don't they? Anyway, Daddy is far too busy these days. You know how important the Christmas Eve service is. I wonder what's keeping him. He's never been that late. Now, you go and wash your hands and face, dear. Dinner's almost ready, and I'm sure Daddy wouldn't want us to wait and let it get cold because... Oh, there he is.
I'm sorry, my love. I would have come sooner, but we have problems, serious problems. I'm afraid Christmas service won't be what it used to be.
Why? What happened?
Well, it's the organ. It doesn't work anymore.
What do you mean, it doesn't work? It's you who got to do the work. It won't play by itself.
I can work as hard as I please. Not a sound. I'm afraid a hungry mouse decided it should be Christmas for his family, too. And the good Lord has shown it the way to the bellows of the organ. There's a big hole there, and not much we can do.
Well, can't you have it fixed in time for the service?
Not a chance. The organ repairman comes from the Ziller Valley, and he won't come up here until next spring. I've got to do something.
Now, don't you worry. Everything will be all right. If the good Lord has led the mouse to the organ, then he will lead you somewhere else. Your Christmas service has always been something special, and I'm sure this year won't be an exception. That organ is not going to spoil your Christmas, or my dinner for that matter. Come on, I've got Leberknödel.
But that night, Pastor Moore hardly touched his dinner. For centuries, there had been a special Christmas Eve service in the Oberndorf Church with organ music. Something had to be done. So, after dinner...
I'm sorry, dear. Daddy can't help you with your story tonight. Daddy has got to go out.
Go out? At this time of the night? Where to?
I'm going to see Franz. Franz Gruber.
Franz Gruber? But that's in Arnsdorf. And it's snowing, Joseph. You'll catch your death.
It's only 3 miles.
And anyway, what can Franz do that you can't? He's a schoolteacher, not an organ repairman.
I know, darling. But at least we can talk. Franz is a very practical man. He has a vivid imagination. And even if he doesn't come up with a solution, well, I can do some thinking on my way over and coming back, and maybe find some inspiration for next week's sermon.
So into the black winter night and the snowstorm disappears Joseph Moore, seeking an answer and hoping to find it with his friend, the schoolteacher, in Arnsdorf.
Joseph, good heavens, man, what are you doing out in this weather? And it is time. Here, let me take your coat.
Franz, you've got to help me. Without your help, there will be no Christmas service.
No service? Why not? What could I possibly do to help? You know, I'm no good at writing sermons. I'm not accustomed to teaching grown-ups.
It's not the sermon. It's our organ. It's dead. Doesn't work anymore. Not a sound.
Oh, that's bad. But what do you expect me to do about it? Or do you want me to perform one of my famous miracles?
No, honestly, Franz, I'm serious.
So am I. But I don't see what I can do. Cancel the service.
I can't cancel the service. It's the most important festival of the year.
Well, then cancel the music.
Oh, now, come on, be honest. What would a Christmas service without music be to you?
Yes, I guess you're right. I could play my guitar.
Oh, you can hardly play organ music on a guitar. It wouldn't sound right. But you could sing to a guitar, couldn't you? Now, what if I wrote some words, could you write some music?
But, Joseph, I'm a school teacher, not a composer.
And I'm a preacher, not a songwriter. Maybe the good Lord has chosen this moment to show us our new careers, Franz. And anyway, what better idea can you suggest? Thank you for listening to me and for your wonderful idea. I'll send you the words as soon as possible. God bless you.
And so Franz Gruber sat in his tiny schoolroom and tentatively wrote his score. On Christmas Eve, the church was full, but Franz Gruber still wasn't there. The service should have started long ago, and no one understood why Pastor Moore wasn't there. He waited and waited until he could wait no longer. And as he was about to explain to his curious flock the reason of the delay and the absence of music this year, the door of the little church was flung open. Throwing off his snow-covered cape, clutching his guitar, there was Franz Gruber, running up to the pulpit. And while tuning his guitar, he whispered to Joseph,
"I hope you like it. It's the best I could do."
And then he sang.
Stille Nacht, heilige Nacht, alle schläft, einsam wacht, nur das traute hochheilige Paar, hol der Knabe im lockigen Haar, schlaf in himmlischer Ruhe, schlaf in himmlischer Ruhe.
Yes, that is how the most famous of all Christmas songs was born, sung for the very first time on Christmas Eve 1818 to the accompaniment of a guitar. Within a week, the whole affair was forgotten. No one except Franz Gruber would have been able to sing the song again. But 13 years later, when the organ repairman from the Ziller Valley was once again repairing the Oberndorf organ, he found a scrap of paper, a music score, tucked behind the pipes. Being interested in music, he took it along and showed it to some of his fellow villagers who were glove makers. They used to give song recitals at fairs as a publicity stunt. They agreed that the music looked good and included it in their repertoire. They sang Silent Night at the Leipzig Fair in 1831, and the song caught on like wildfire. And today it is sung in all languages of the world.
The most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be a good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happiest season of all. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Thank you. be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful time. Oh, the most wonderful time of the year.
Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad. Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas.
Feliz Navidad, performed by Jose Feliciano. And before that, Tom Meyer with The Most Wonderful Time of the Year. We also heard Tom telling us the story in a little drama that he wrote called Silent Night. You're listening to Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. And this is our first Christmas show for the holiday season. And next week, we bring our main Christmas program. Well, now time for another tradition of something that we like to present every year. A Very White Christmas, read by Neville Gray.
Thank you. Let me take you back in time, back towards the end of the 16th century, to the year 1596. The scene is Amsterdam. The Dam Square was there all right, but hippies were yet a long way out of sight, and the Royal Palace had not yet been built. The old church was there, its bells chiming out the tunes of the hour. I went there again yesterday just to sample one of those tunes, as they're played nowadays. It was pretty cold as I took my tape recorder to the old church square, now part of Amsterdam's red light district, where the girls sit in the windows of quaint little houses, bathing in the soft glow of rosy lampshades and waiting for the odd, lonely customer out for a good time. All right, all right. The ditties of those years were different from today's. Amsterdam was a small trading town built on the banks of an estuary called, as it's called today, the A. People must have celebrated Christmas in much the same manner as they do today, in churches that were more divided than ever as the great conflict between the old Roman Catholic faith and the Reformation was still raging on with unabated bitterness. Amsterdam was ruled by its city fathers, the city corporation which held its sessions at the old town hall. Later, a new town hall was built in Dam Square, where it has since changed its function into that of Amsterdam's famous Royal Palace. And the wise fathers of Amsterdam, a city which rapidly developed into a republic within the Republic of the Netherlands, as the Venice of the North, scanned the oceans in search of new treasures. The globe of the world took on a magical significance in the eyes of these city rulers, and they wondered if, perhaps, some shorter seaway could be found to the distant oriental realms of China and Japan, those legendary empires traversed on foot by the great Venetian explorer Marco Polo. Marco Polo travelled by land, but should not the Arctic Ocean offer a much more convenient and shorter route?
Attention, please. Will all passengers for flight KL-47 to Tokyo go to gate number B5? Please keep your boarding cards available.
To Tokyo, across the North Pole, just like that. How dead easy it's all become today in the 1970s. Board a taxi to the airport, then board a plane which takes you up and across the vast expanse of polar ice and snow to land you in the magic realm of Cathay, which we now call Japan. It's a cinch today, but back in 1596... In the year of our Lord and Saviour, 1596, two ships left the port of Amsterdam and set sail for the distant north. One ship, commanded by Captain Jan Cornelisson Rijk, lost its way at an early stage of the voyage and turned back. But the other, piloted by Jacob van Heemskerk and carrying a crew of 15 and a well-known cartographer, Willem Barents, got stuck in the ice of the Arctic Ocean. The 17 men were forced to spend the long Arctic night on the island of Nova Zembla, a place of perennial dusk where man had scarcely, if ever, set foot before. What, you may well wonder, prompted the Amsterdam seamen to set sail to the north, risking death in that cruel world of eternal snow and ice? It was a time of rumours and speculations in northern Europe, but not about such things as snowmen sledging along with bells jingling. The stories were all about immensely rich countries in the Far East, countries where gold and silver grew on trees, and the quickest way there was to round Cape North and follow the northern coastline of Muscovia. After a few abortive expeditions, the Amsterdam City Fathers decided to put up a prize for the man who would be the first to find the northern seaway towards the realms of China and Japan. Two skippers, Captain Rijk and Captain van Heemskerk, took up the challenge, and their expeditions set out for the unknown, eager for success and the sizable reward held out for them. So off they went, in the year 1596 to remote China and Japan. The great adventure was on, and it would baffle the world. Today, the Dutch National Museum in Amsterdam still keeps some objects recalling the men's grueling experience in that Arctic hell. But I'll turn to that later in the course of this very, very white Christmas. I won't bother you with the names of all the crew members, but for that of one man, Gerrit de Veer, who was probably the ship's second mate. It was de Veer who wrote the now famous day-by-day account of the journey and the wintering on Nova Zembla. May 18, 1596, the expedition set sail for the North Cape. June 9th, they discover Bear Island. June 19th, they discover Spitsbergen. July 17th, the expedition arrives at Nova Zembla. August 27th, and they're hopelessly locked in the ice. September 17th, they start building a hut to pass the winter on Nova Zembla. For timber, they use trees washed onto the shore along with wood from the ship. The ship's carpenter has died, but most of the men prove excellent craftsmen. They're only a small bunch, and their means of survival are limited, but rarely have so few men displayed so much courage, resourcefulness, and persistence in the face of that whitest of all Christmases, the polar night. Finally, the sun sets on Heemskerk, Barents, and their men. They've now gone into the hut and cut their provisions into daily rations, and these are strictly adhered to. In their crucial battle against the elements, the men cling together as a team in which there's no place for individual greed. From time to time, they manage to kill a bear. Occasionally, they take a pick of the meat, but they still regard it with suspicion. They prefer the meat of Arctic foxes that are caught playing on the roof of the hut. Absolute dark has settled on the snow-covered plains. The only glimmer of light is provided by the stars when, during clear spells, the men venture out of the hut by the chimney. Groping together inside, they hear the sound of the blizzards tearing at their shelter. They fear the end and anxiously wait for the light to return. Let's read now from the diary of Gerrit de Veer, which he kept by the wavering glow of a wick floating in bear's grease during that winter of 1596.
The 24th of December, being Christmas Eve, it was fair weather. Then we opened the doors again and saw much open water in the sea, for we had heard the sea crack and drive, and although it wasn't day, yet we could see quite far. Towards evening, it blew hard out of the northeast, with great store of snow, so that all the passage that we had made open before was stopped up again. The 25th of December, being Christmas Day, it was foul weather, with a northwest wind, and yet, though it was foul weather, we heard the foxes run over our house, wherewith some of our men said it was an ill sign. And while we sat disputing why it should be an ill sign, some of our men made answer that it was an ill sign because we couldn't take them, to put them in a pot to roast them, for that had been a very good sign for us.
Still, the bad weather continued, and the temperature dropped to a point where the men were at a loss how to protect themselves from freezing to death. They made a huge fire, put on all available clothing and heated tiles to warm their feet as they lay down to sleep in their bunks. But despite all precautions, they woke up in the morning to find the boards of their bunks frozen white. Then they'd look at one another in silent dismay. But soon afterwards, hope would flicker again as they knew that the sun was now at its lowest point and they would see its return before long. Thus it happened that for a handful of Dutch seamen locked in the Arctic ice on their impossible voyage to the Far East, Christmas of the year 1596 became a very real Christmas indeed. On that day, they began to look out for the return of the light, the sun, that would again bring warmth to their world. But many days had yet to pass before the men could see the sun, bleak and phantom-like, hovering over the horizon.
On the 4th day of January, it was still foul, stormy weather, with much snow and great cold. The wind southwest, and we were forced to keep in the house. And to know where the wind blew, we thrust a half-pike out the chimney with a little cloth or feather upon it. But as soon as we thrust it out, it was presently frozen, as hard as a piece of wood, and could not go about or stir with the wind. The 5th day of January, it was somewhat still and calm weather. Then we dug our door open again, that we might go out and carry out all the filth that had been made during the time of our being shut in. We made everything handsome and fetched in the wood which we had chopped, and that was about all we did that day. And when we had busied ourselves all day, we remembered it was the eve of the 12th night. Then we prayed our skipper, Heemskerk, that we might be merry that night, and said that we were content to spend some of the wine that night, which we had spared, and which was our share every second day. And so, that night we made merry and drank to the three kings. And therewith we had 2 pounds of meal, whereof we made pancakes fried in oil, and every man a white biscuit, which we sopped in wine. And so, supposing that we were in our own country and among our friends, it comforted us as well as if we had made a great banquet in our own house.
The men rejoiced in the prospect that the long polar night would now soon be over. Such was Christmas for those seamen wintering on Nova Zembla in the year 1596. A very white Christmas, if ever there was one. At home in Amsterdam, relatives of the missing crew made their way to the church to attend the night service and pray to God from the depths of their sorrow. And the Lord had mercy upon the crew, although he eventually took 5 of their 17 lives. On January 24th, Captain van Heemskerk and chronicler Gerrit de Veer actually see the sun peering over the horizon while they're taking a walk along the beach. They return to the house and tell Barents, the cartographer, who flatly refuses to believe it. It can't be. In his reckoning, the sun will not appear for another 14 days. The clock has long since frozen, but they have been using a sand glass to keep careful track of the time. But Kahler's Astronomical Almanac, printed in Venice for use between 1589 and 1600, settles the dispute. Another crew member dies. After 3 days, they dig a grave in the snow, and on that memorable 27th of January, all see the sun.
Today, the companions had a sad duty to fulfill. Another comrade, the second to die on the island, has to be buried. When the grave is 7 feet deep, all gather for the funeral and psalm-singing ceremony. Afterwards they have breakfast, and as they sit discussing the mass of snow piled up on the house, and decide that, in the event of another snowstorm, it will be safest to scramble out by the chimney, the skipper says he will try this at once. Climbing out on top of the house, he sees the sun shining in full luster, and calling out to the men below, invites them to join him and witness it for themselves. They all climb out, and their moods, still heavy over the loss of their companion, turn to rejoicing and thanksgiving.
Death has claimed its toll. The sun rises above the horizon, and hopes are revived of returning home to Amsterdam. During their voyage south, following the Russian coastline in their sailing barges, three more lives are lost. Willem Barents dies of exhaustion and scurvy. But he leaves memories of great courage and perseverance, and his name lives on in that of the Barents Sea, still to be found on maps in all the languages of the world. Three centuries later, on September 7th, 1871, Captain Elling Carlsen of Hammerfest, Norway, discovers Barents Harbour on Nova Zembla. After 2 days, his expedition hits upon the hut which Barents and his men built in the snow. In it, they find the things left behind by the Dutchman, most of them perfectly preserved in the ice. Today, the History Department of the Dutch National Museum in Amsterdam still shows the clock that stopped in Heemskerk and Barents hut just before the whitest of all their white Christmases began.
Attention, please. Last call for flight KL-47 to Tokyo. All passengers to gate number B5, please.
It's all a cinch nowadays, flying over the Barents Sea in a snug, warm plane. Looking out of the window from your comfortable armchair, you can see the white mountain ranges where, just as in the days of Heemskerk and Barents, the polar bears are hunting their prey, and where a very, very white Christmas reigns all the year round.
Neville Gray, from Radio Nederland, the Dutch International Service, reading that story from 1972. Well, let's now have another piece of music. Max Greger and his orchestra playing a medley of two Christmas songs, Sleigh Ride and, I don't know if you can even call it a Christmas song, well, it certainly is with his arrangement, It Happened in Sun Valley. Thank you. Bert Klemperth and Holiday for Bells. And before that, Max Greger and his orchestra with the medley beginning with Sleigh Ride. Well, we're actually almost at the end of our first Christmas program for 2016. If you want to get in touch with us to let us know what you think of the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is very, very simple. It's pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. That's pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. Now, listeners to this program who listen via shortwave will catch two special transmissions on the 14th and 16th of December. The times and frequencies are at our website, pcjmedia.com. And our main Christmas program will be broadcast on shortwave to North America on the 21st and 23rd of December, with the program airing as normal on PCJ Radio International on the 25th. You can find all the details at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. We are going to be issuing a special eQSL for any of you who happen to listen to the Christmas program via shortwave. Again, that's pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. We're going to leave you today with Josh Groban and the song Believe, from the soundtrack to the film The Polar Express. So until next time, everyone, so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
Children sleeping, snow is softly falling, dreams are calling like bells in the distance. We seems the magic slipped away. We find it all again on Christmas Day. Believe in what your heart is saying. Hear the melody that's playing. There's no time to waste. There's so much to celebrate. Believe in what you feel inside and give your dreams the wings. It seems that we have lost our way. We find ourselves again on Christmas Day. Believe in what your heart is saying. Hear the melody that's playing. There's no time to waste. There's so much to celebrate. Believe in what you feel inside. And give your dreams the wings.